Coming up today, we'll examine President Trump's nomination of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as Secretary of Health and Human Services. Former White House health advisor Katie Tolento will be with us.
The biomedical research enterprise has been so dramatically undermined, and people who've been, you know, clarion calls, canaries in the coal mine for so long, like Mr. Kennedy, are now being seen as the national treasures that they always were.
Then we'll talk with Kevin Freeman about the nature of money and returning to the kind of currency America's founders had in mind.
I think we're going to get gold and silver standard brought back to the United States at the state level under the Constitution.
Thanks for joining us. I'm Jeff Chambly, and this is The Stand Radio. Well, no one can doubt there's a shakeup going on in Washington with the new president and the host of new appointments that he's bringing. The nomination of RFK Jr. as Secretary of Health and Human Services is expected to bring a wave of change to that department and those under its authority. My guest believes this is the best thing to happen to healthcare in many years. Katie Tolento is an epidemiologist who served as President Trump's top health advisor at the White House Domestic Policy Council and now heads up the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries as its executive director. Ms. Tolento, it's great to have you with us today.
Thanks so much for having me, and God bless your audience.
Well, assuming that RFK Jr. is confirmed, what federal agencies will he oversee as head of HHS?
Yeah, so the Health and Human Services Department, if it were a country, it would be the eighth largest country.
Wow.
So it heads up Medicare, Medicaid. So those are the largest insurance programs in the world. And also the public health agencies, Centers for Disease Control, the Food and Drug Administration, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, the Health Resources Administration, the National Institutes of Health. So all the major agencies of healthcare in our country, you know, the federal government pays for or subsidizes half of all healthcare in our country. So it is a massive undertaking for anyone, and no one's really fully qualified, fully prepared for that kind of task. But I think he's as qualified as anyone could be.
Well, that's an enormous level of influence that he has there. So many of our agencies have been politicized in the last administration. If he is confirmed, what is he going to do to bring that kind of corruption to an end?
Well, I do think that Mr. Kennedy is uniquely positioned to understand how the deep state operates. He has been suing agencies of the federal government his entire career, first as an environmental lawyer, but then in his capacity as head of the Children's Health Defense. So on, you know, more health related issues. And he has won many, many cases, not just against federal agencies, but also giant corporations like Monsanto for poisoning people with their ubiquitous pesticide glyphosate, otherwise known as Roundup.
Yeah.
So I think he is uniquely positioned to deal with the resistance that comes from those agencies when you're in litigation with them, and the back and forth, the patience that it takes, what kinds of games they can play, and what the statutes allow for in overcoming those games.
That's really good. And you sort of hit on my next question, because a recent poll has come out from RMG that 42% of federal employees surveyed said that they plan on resisting the Trump administration. It sounds like that he is no stranger to that kind of opposition. And I would think that if you're on the inside, RFK Jr. is not the man that you want leading that group.
Well, that's right. I mean, 42 sounds kind of low to me. When I was in the White House, I would have estimated it would be 95% of the deep state resisting us. I think you're right that Mr. Kennedy is familiar with these shenanigans, and not only being resisted by, you know, federal bureaucrats who are unelected and, you know, just waiting out politicians from term to term. But I think he's been opposed by more than 42% of Americans for many years. You know, just in terms of his vaccine work and his efforts to try to bring freedom to parents and medical freedom, but also to force the scientific debates into the public. You know, until recently, that debate has been censored. It has been underground. It's been taboo. It's been ridiculed. He's been ridiculed for decades. So if you had, even if you had asked me 5-10 years ago, you know, what do I think about Bobby Kennedy? I would have said, oh, he's an anti-vax kook Kennedy Democrat. Like, why would I ever give him any credibility? And I've just learned so much. We've all woken up so much. I honestly think it's the silver lining of the COVID epidemic is that, you know, the trust in our scientific so-called authorities and experts and just the research enterprise, the biomedical research enterprise, has been so dramatically undermined. And people who've been, you know, clarion calls, canaries in the coal mine for so long, like Mr. Kennedy, are now being seen as the national treasures that they always were.
I want to ask you about one of the goals that he mentioned in a recent post on X, speaking of President Trump's orders that he had given RFK. He said he would return our agencies to their rich tradition of gold standard evidence-based science. What comes to your mind when he speaks about evidence-based science?
So, I mean, I think it used to be once upon a time that when you wanted a product to come out onto the market, you had to do rigorous clinical trials. And the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, was supposed to be the independent arbiter of those trials. They weren't in the pocket of the manufacturers. They were there to protect us, the public, from the corporate interests and potential greed and financial interests of those giant corporations that manufacture the products. They were there to protect us from them, not to protect them from us and scrutiny by us and questions and opposition by us. And it seems as if they've really lost their way. And, you know, Mr. Kennedy talks a lot about his family's role in setting up the public health system that we have today. I worked in the United States Senate for many years on the committee that was often chaired by Senator Ted Kennedy, who was a strong champion for the public health enterprise. And certainly I would argue that that public health enterprise really took off under President John Kennedy, who's established, you know, the presidential fitness standards and that sort of thing. So I think that Bobby Kennedy has a strong legacy to uphold when it comes to restoring trust in the public health enterprise. I hope that he can do it. I don't know if it's possible. We'll have to see.
President Trump, in his inaugural speech, said that it's going to be U.S. government policy from now on, that there are only two sexes. And I tell you, that was a bold statement. You lament the fact that you even have to say that. But if federal policy is that there are two sexes, what is the response of a Kennedy-led HHS when it comes to some of the transgender ideology that we've seen implemented in the medical institutions?
Absolutely. So what that means is, you know, HHS, as well as many other departments of the federal government, have been, sort of one after another, been putting out regulations that require non-discrimination on the basis of sex to include non-discrimination on the basis of gender identity. They have basically defined gender identity as sex for purposes of civil rights, right? So, which is a very novel interpretation. And so what that means is that hospitals cannot discriminate on the basis of gender identity. So you've got a Catholic hospital, for instance, that, you know, refuses to participate in mutilation surgeries and or hormone treatments. And so that they would be persecuted. And in fact, these types of non-discrimination rules have just come out in the past year. They were finalized, and healthcare providers and all other healthcare entities were, you know, kind of struggling to figure out how to respond to that. I work with a lot of Catholic and Christian organizations now who have been struggling about, are we going to, you know, be in litigation against the department because of this?
Hmm. Katie, tell us about the Alliance for Healthcare Sharing Ministries and how you see RFK Jr.'s leadership coming alongside your ministry.
Yeah, so the Alliance is the trade organization for healthcare sharing ministries, which are communities of religious believers that come together to share one another's medical bills. We're not an insurance program, but we are a ministry, and the members of our ministries, you know, they come alongside and they will transfer money to each other and also notes of prayer and encouragement. It's a little bit of a more humanized approach to healthcare, we would argue. And I do think that Mr. Kennedy has been an absolute champion of religious liberty when it comes to healthcare and of freedom generally when it comes to healthcare. So I am encouraged and excited that he will be an ally in the diversity of choices and options in the healthcare marketplace, including the choice to participate in something that's not insurance, the choice to pursue a religious community as your solution when it comes to financing health costs. So I feel totally confident that he's going to be an ally for people of faith around the country.
When you think of the weight of responsibility that these agencies that you've mentioned have for the well-being of our population, we have got to get this right. So what are you asking people to do to help this nomination move forward?
Yeah, so I mean, there is nothing more important than calling your United States senator, each one of them. There's two in every state. Please look them up and call their offices and let them know that you're watching and that you don't think this is a partisan issue and that the health of your children should not be a partisan issue. And Mr. Kennedy needs to get to work right away.
Katie Tolento, Executive Director of the Alliance of Healthcare Sharing Ministries. Their website is www.ahcsm.org. We'll put a link to that on our podcast page. Katie, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Well, there is a lot of euphoria with the incoming Trump administration and hopes that a national financial disaster can be avoided. But is that realistic? What about the ballooning national debt, inflation, and the privacy threats of a digital currency? How do we prepare for these? Joining me is Kevin Freeman, who is known as one of the world's leading experts on the issues of economic warfare and financial terrorism. He has been a consultant for various federal agencies and is a best-selling author, writing extensively on ways to prepare for financial disaster, of course, all through a biblical lens. He's also host of one of the newest programs on American Family Radio, Pirate Money Radio. Kevin, it's great to have you with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be on American Family Radio. We're on Saturday mornings, but it's also great to be with you today.
Awesome. Let's start with the obvious question. What is pirate money?
Yeah, no, we've got Pirate Money Radio, and my latest book is Pirate Money. And quite simply, what it is gold and silver. The reason we use the term pirate money is when the founders in the Constitution, they wrote about Article 1, Section 10, they said, no state shall use anything but gold and silver coins. And they were literally referring to gold doubloons, which was a double escudo, a Spanish coin, or silver, Spanish mill dollars, also known as pieces of eight. In the parlance at the time, it'd be gold doubloons and pieces of eight. And when I say that to somebody, the first thing they say back to me is, oh, like Long John Silver or Captain Jack Sparrow. It's pirate money. And it literally was. That's the money we used in America at the founding of our nation. They didn't want to use British farthings and pounds and shillings. They wanted to use Spanish money. It was the currency of the day. And most of the Spanish money that circulated in America came from pirate attacks on Spanish ships.
Wow. Of course, many of the financial woes that we are experiencing nationally are tied to the fact that we are no longer connected to a gold standard. How has that affected the economy overall now that you look back through history?
Well, 1971, Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard. If you look at an inflation chart up until 1971, it's just bouncing around. It never gets really dramatically bad. But the moment he took us off the gold standard, the last vestiges of it, inflation spiked. And we had the inflation of the Jimmy Carter years that were just absolutely terrible. Well, the Nixon years were bad, too. We had Nixon take us off the gold standard, bad inflation, and so he tried to institute wage and price controls, which of course never work. It wasn't until President Reagan and Paul Volcker got the money supply under control. The problem is when you have paper money, you can print as much of it as you want, and that's what they did.
I followed some of your podcast when you're talking about actually a move of several states to bring gold back into circulation as currency that you can buy and sell. If you will touch on that just a little bit, what's going on in the states and some of the legislation? And that's very exciting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, in 1971, I was a 10-year-old kid, and I saw that they'd done this, and I was reading my pocket constitution, and yes, I was that nerdy. I read Spider-Man comics and the pocket constitution. Anyway, I read that we'd left the gold standard, and I said, no, that's not right. The founders wanted a gold standard. So I wrote about this in my book, Game Plan, which is now 11 years ago, and I said a state ought to take gold on deposit or silver on deposit and let people transact using a debit card just like they instead of U.S. dollars. Well, Texas actually entered legislation in 2023. It didn't pass but came close. So I wrote the book Pirate Money to explain how it worked. And then I started getting calls from states all across the country, including Mississippi, including Alabama, including Florida, including Alaska and Iowa and Utah. Well, they read the book, and now there are 30 states interested, and I think two dozen will enter legislation in this brand new year, brand new session. I think we're going to get gold and silver standard brought back to the United States at the state level under the Constitution.
That is exciting. It's something I've not heard about, so that's very intriguing. Tell us a little bit about the benefits for an individual who could use gold. And the way that you talk about this is having a debit card and using modern technology to really engage in the transfer of gold assets back and forth. What are some of the practical benefits that we would have?
Well, for one thing, right now it's kind of hard to buy gold. You don't know who to trust when you buy it. You go to Costco and you can buy these little gold bars for $2,700 or something, but then go try and spend them. Take them back to Costco. I want a new washing machine. Well, they won't take your gold back. You have to take it to a pawn shop, and you don't trust that. Then you get taxed on it because it is deemed, under the current law, IRS code, it's deemed a collectible. Well, so I buy gold, and it goes up in value, and I sell it or try and dispose of it in some way, and all of a sudden, you have to pay a capital gains tax on that. Well, why should I pay a capital gains tax for something that maintains its purchasing power? And I'll give you a real practical idea. Between the founding of the automobile as a consumer product and today, the price of gasoline has never gone outside of a dime to a quarter. You say, that's crazy, Kevin. How has it never been outside? I was in California last week and the gas was almost $5 a gallon. Here in Texas, it's a little under $3 a gallon. No, it's always been between a dime and a quarter. If you take a pre-1964 quarter that has silver content, the value of that silver right now in a dime is $2.50 and a quarter is a little over $5, $6. Somewhere in that range. And gasoline has always maintained that price. So if you have your money in the form of gold and silver, it maintains its purchasing power over time and you don't have to deal with inflation. You can buy a hamburger now for about the same price you could buy a hamburger 100 years ago if you're doing it in gold or silver.
That's incredible. Folks, if you'd like to check this out and find out if your state is involved in this or maybe help get this legislation going in your state, the website is transactionalgold.com, transactionalgold.com. Kevin, let's move on to some other things. Obviously, a new incoming president. What are you encouraged about? What are you concerned about when it comes to President Trump's financial policy?
Well, let's start with encouragement. I'm encouraged by the fact that over 4 years, he studied what was wrong with the Congress, what was wrong with the bureaucracy and the administration, and he really has worked up plans and ideas, and he's putting in great people. I mean, the people that he's recommended for posts are solid. 4 years ago, I think he assumed everybody who came in would report to him, and he could fire them and do whatever he needed to make it work. It doesn't work that way in government, and he learned. Now, what concerns me is we have a $36.5 trillion debt. Our interest only is $3 billion a day. We're spending over $1 trillion a year in interest only. We spend $2 trillion more than we bring in. All of the discretionary spending that Congress can address totals about $2 trillion. Mandatory spending, that's interest on the debt, that's Medicare. This doesn't even include defense, that's Social Security. All of that, which is supposedly untouchable, that exceeds what we're bringing in tax revenue. So we are facing a debt problem. Now, I'm hopeful if you can grow the economy faster than you can grow the government spending, you actually can have a good economy. That's his challenge. Can we grow the economy faster than we grow the government. And if he can do that, we can avert the debt cliff that we see ahead.
If you had the opportunity to be in his inner circle or have an afternoon visit with President Trump, what would be your financial or economic advice to him if you had a limited window of time?
Well, you know, if we, what I said earlier, if we could limit the growth of government and you say, I'm going to cap, you cannot grow but half of the growth in GDP, that's the most you can grow your department. There's no zero balance budgeting, you know, where every year they say, hey, this is what we spent last year. We need an extra automatic 6 or 8% to, no. You say your budget has to only grow maximum half of what the GDP is growing. Otherwise, it's a national crisis that we'll be facing. So I would say just limit your departments. And there are a lot of departments we've got to clean up and get rid of. They don't make sense for the American people. We continue to pay bureaucrats. I remember as a young man looking to go into my career, I was told, here's your choice. You can have stability and go to government, but you'll get paid less, or you can go into the free market and get paid more. That's what we all grew up understanding. That's no longer true. If you're in government, you get the stability, you get the job guarantee, and you still get paid more with more benefits, and we're footing the bill. Every bureaucrat that's a regulator costs us, according to an Auburn University study, 138 jobs. Our economy shrinks when we grow government. It doesn't expand. And here's another thing. If we took our regulations back to the standards of the 1940s, and I'm not suggesting we do that, but we had a whole lot less regulation then. According to estimates from top economists, including the World Bank, our economy, the average income for Americans would be $330,000 a year, not $60,000 a year. We're literally hurting the people we claim that we're benefiting by growing this massive government. We've got to shrink the size of government.
Mm. China has been in the headlines recently. Concerning our national debt, if you would connect the dots a little bit and talk about our national security, because how does a nation like ours, $36.5 trillion in debt, what sort of national security implications does that bring?
Well, it used to be that China owned a lot of our debt. When we had a $10 trillion debt when I was working initially with the Pentagon as a consultant, it was $10 trillion total, and $1.2 trillion of it was held by the Chinese. Okay. Today, they hold under $1 trillion in our debt, and we have a $36.5 trillion debt now. They hold a much smaller portion than they used to. They've been exiting holdings of our treasury bonds and buying gold instead, which goes back to the whole pirate money notion. At some point, if foreigners stop buying our debt and stop using our dollar, like the BRICS nations have threatened, I don't know if they can pull it off, but they've threatened to do that. If they do that now, we will be in the situation Zimbabwe was. We'll just be printing money. The Federal Reserve will just be buying our debt. We're essentially printing money, or Argentina, or Weimar Germany, or all of the failed economies of the past. We've got to maintain a strong American dollar around the world. The Chinese are working to dethrone the dollar. They're working with Putin now, and that's got to be a part of the calculations. When we do foreign policy, we can no longer just assume everybody wants dollars. At some point, they intend to stop using them.
We're talking with Kevin Freeman today, host of one of the newest programs on American Family Radio called Pirate Money Radio. The website is piratemoneyradio.com. Kevin, if you would, let's bring this down to the individual and family level, because one of the dangers about talking like this is people just get glossy-eyed and they think, I can't do anything about this. Speak to the average family. What can we do with our own finances to prepare or insulate us from some of the harm that would come?
Well, one of the things you can do is get out of debt, because debt is a trap and people get harmed by it regardless, especially when interest rates are going up. The second thing you can do is when you have extra money, maybe you could look at, if we get pirate money passed, you could look at having some gold and silver. The problem is it's not easy to buy. Everybody says, oh yeah, I need to get me some of that. Well, silver's a little cheaper than gold. It's a little easier to acquire, but you still don't know how to do it. That's why we're trying to get this legislation passed. And I think we will. And if we get it passed in Texas or Oklahoma, it's useful in Mississippi. It's useful in New Jersey. It's useful in Florida, whatever. And we've got a big movement pushing it. But you got to look at your finances. Don't assume the dollar is always going to be permanent. When I was a kid, $1.60 was the minimum wage. In 1971, the minimum wage, my dad said, I'll give you a dollar to cut the front lawn. I said, okay, Dad, but I want $1.60. That's the minimum wage. It took an hour to cut the lawn. So he said, fine, Mr. Debater, I'll give you the $1.60. And what did I do with it? I pulled two dimes aside, set them aside. That was my tithe, right? 20 cents out of the $1.60. Then I went and bought a Spider-Man comic. I bought a Slurpee. I bought a McDonald's cheeseburger, fries, and a chocolate shake. You know, I had a fabulous time on my 1 hour of labor. You can't do that today, unfortunately. You can't get all of those things. Now, if I'd kept the Spider-Man comic, it would be worth more than buying all those things because it's appreciated. So look for assets that can potentially appreciate in value. Don't put your money on things that are just automatically going to lose value. Underbuy your car. Don't overbuy your car. Your house can gain value, so buy a good house. Don't put your money in those things that will wear out or depreciate. Jesus said it best. He said, don't put your treasure where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. Put your treasure in heaven. So the first thing to do, put your tithe aside and give to the kingdom of God. The second thing is when you're investing, invest in assets that will appreciate, not buying things that will wear out and depreciate.
You also are part of the Blaze TV network. You have a show called Economic War Room. How can people watch that program?
EconomicWarRoom.com.
Okay.
Or if you're a subscriber to Blaze, you can find us on Blaze there. But EconomicWarRoom.com, you can sign up and get our free economic battle plans. And when you do that, we'll send you an email every week saying what's on the show.
Yeah.
And if you go to PirateMoneyRadio.com and sign up, we'll send you an email each week to say what's on Pirate Money Radio. Economic War Room is a little more political of a show. We just talked about the 14th Amendment and birthright citizenship with Congressman Louis Gohmert and E.W. Jackson, who's also a host on AFR. But I think it's a good show. We try and put it in layman's language and help you understand all the issues from an economic perspective and how they will impact your family.
All right, so a bunch of websites here, economicwarroom.com to find the show on Blaze TV. Also check out the website piratemoneyradio.com to find out. You can also view past episodes of Kevin's radio program. And the book, we wanted you to check out the book, Pirate Money, Discovering the Founder's Hidden Plan for Economic Justice and Defeating the Great Reset. And you can find that at piratemoneybook.com. Kevin, once again, welcome to American Family Radio. It's great to have you as part of our lineup. We are very excited about it and look forward to what we're going to hear from you.
Thank you so much, Jeff. God bless you.
Next weekend, we'll look at the moral state of the church and learn why a majority of churchgoers want their pastors to address current issues from the pulpit. Our guest will be Bible teacher, pastor, and radio host Dr. Ray Pritchard. If you haven't gotten your free trial subscription to The Stand magazine or signed up for our daily email update, you can do that at afa.net/thestand. And listen to this program and others on our podcast page at afr.net. Thank you for listening and join us next time on The Stand Radio.